It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we talk about credit card debt, how much people in Wisconsin are carrying, and how we can manage it. First, no business development deal has loomed quite as large in recent memory as Wisconsin's 2017 agreement with Taiwan-based electronics manufacturer Foxconn. It was seen at the time as a big win for now former Governor Scott Walker. It was referred to by President Trump as the eighth wonder of the world. When Foxconn in Wisconsin first entered the deal, the company said it would invest roughly $10 billion to build an LCD screen factory in Mount Pleasant. In return, it would receive tax breaks, big ones, and other incentives from the state. Originally, it was estimated that the factory would create roughly 13,000 jobs. Since then, the proposed facility has gone through a number of changes, and a new report finds that the deal might not ultimately yield the return on investment for the state as previously estimated, even if it's renegotiated. Our next guest is the author of that report and joins us now to talk about it. Tim Bartik is a senior economist for the nonpartisan W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us how you came to write this report? Who is asking for this, Tim?
Well, the Department of, I do a lot of research on state and local economic development, and everyone involved in that nationwide has been interested in Foxconn because it was so outside normal parameters. And the State Department Administration asked that I look at what might be the implications of a new contract, what would happen under various scenarios of how a new contract might be applied to a much smaller Foxconn project, and also a radically different project. It's not going to be making the same things that was originally planned.
Before we dig into that, talk about how this Foxconn deal was out of the usual parameters of this state-supported industrial development.
Well, under the original scenario with 13,000 jobs, essentially, if you look at how much is paid over time and discount it back to today's dollars, you were paying over $170,000 per job. Now, the typical incentive deal in the U.S. is about $24,000 per job, $170,000 versus $24,000. So we're talking about over seven times the usual deal. Even the Amazon New York deal was around $40,000 per job. So that aroused some controversy. And here, Foxconn's four times as great. So, a lot of people observing state economic development were very concerned when the Foxconn deal came out because the concern was this is going to lead to an escalation of the state incentive wars, and it may be a problem for the nation as a whole if every state imitated what Wisconsin did with Foxconn.
Have we seen that happen, or is this standing out as a unique blip on the public subsidy radar?
I think it's up in the air what's going to happen. I mean, you saw some really high incentive offers to Amazon. I mean, New York, they actually were much higher. I mean, Newark offered more than New York, and Maryland offered more than Northern Virginia, which succeeded in getting Amazon. So there were some incredibly large deals offered for Amazon. On the other hand, there's also been a backlash, and actually I think it's today that Missouri and Kansas are signing some sort of truce to the war. They've been fighting over firms going back and forth between Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas for years, and they're trying to somehow ease back this competition. So, I think they're both political forces are at work. They're both some states wanting to get more aggressive, and then other people saying, let's calm this competition down.
Based on what we initially saw as the proposal, 13,000 jobs, what has changed today, as far as we know it, as to what Foxconn is actually going to build?
Well, I don't have any inside information, except that the media reports are all saying we might be talking about 1,500 jobs or 1,800 jobs. So it would be much smaller project. It would not be this big technically advanced, very advanced flat screen TV manufacturing, state of the art. It would be much not as advanced. It would be more of a research facility. It'd be more roboticized, more capital intensive. So it looks like a very different, much smaller project. Now, in some sense, you could say it's not going to cost as much then. But the question I was trying to look at was, what if you applied the same credit rates, investment tax credit rates and job creation tax credit rates of the original deal to this much smaller deal? And the answer is actually you could get even greater cost, as much as $290,000 per job And why did the cost go up? Well, it's largely because it looks as if the new project will be what economists call more capital intensive, but what you could simply say, it's going to have more robots per worker.
Talking to Tim Bartik from the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research about a report he did on Foxconn's deal with Wisconsin and its possible future. Tim, people talk a lot about, a lot of this money is conditioned on Foxconn actually creating X number of jobs, and they have to hit these different benchmarks. Are there fixed costs, though, that the state already has paid, is paying, will pay as part of this deal to develop the area that we're not going to get back?
Well, that's the real question. I mean, you can run scenarios, you can run a million scenarios of what might happen under different things under the original contract. I mean, the reality is the local governments there put in a lot of money in the infrastructure, I think close to $1 billion, maybe more than that. And in theory, that's supposed to be reimbursed by property taxes Foxconn's supposed to pay. The state's on the hook if Foxconn doesn't pay, so the state's guaranteed some of that. There's also the whole issue of that even if, let's say under some scenarios, Foxconn creates 1,500 jobs, and let's say the state later on claws back some of the incentives. I mean, essentially what it amounts to is giving a no-interest loan to Foxconn of $116,000 per job that you then try to recover in inflation in dollars years later that are not worth as much because it's many years later that you're not adjusting for inflation and the clawbacks and everything else. So essentially, there still would be a subsidy. So under a best-case scenario, I suppose you could say the best-case scenario for Wisconsin residents for Foxconn would be if somehow it only created 1,500 jobs, you paid it some money, the money was later clawed back, and somehow Foxconn still kept the jobs there. You could also run scenarios where the whole plant closes down, in which case we would have made a no-interest loan. Wisconsin residents would have made a no-interest loan to Foxconn and gotten nothing for it in the long term. I mean, the reality is, look, jobs are valuable. I mean, they increase employment to population ratios. They bring in some tax revenue. So no one's denying that job creation has value. The question is it worth $170,000 per job, or is it worth $290,000 per job? And my answer is no, it probably isn't. That if you look at the benefits from this and compare them with the cost, and not just the cost of the incentives, but the fact that the incentives mean that there's something else the state budget is not doing that it otherwise would be doing. Either you're raising household taxes, you're raising other business taxes, or you're cutting spending on something, roads, you're cutting spending on public schools, universities, something. There is a cost to this, and I think under most scenarios, if you pay $200,000 per job, it's highly unlikely that the benefits for Wisconsin residents will exceed the cost.
As you mentioned, you, Tim, looked at scenarios where the deal is renegotiated, where we look at the new reality of what Foxconn might do, reach a new agreement between the state and Foxconn. The governor or the administration has indicated they might be interested in doing that. What would be the advantage of going back to the drawing board on this?
Well, I think the advantage is it's a totally new project. I mean, the original project is not really what seems to be happening. So I think the advantage is you could go back to the drawing board, and I think you could up front negotiate a deal that might make more sense for Wisconsin residents that would have lower cost per job. I mean, as I said, jobs are valuable. They provide benefits for Wisconsin residents. I think that should be the bottom line for Wisconsin policymakers. What's best for Wisconsin residents if we balance the benefits versus the cost? And if you're paying, $20,000 per job or $30,000 per job, there is a good chance that when you're creating manufacturing jobs, that could pay off. There could be enough effects on employment population ratios and earnings rates and wage rates that it could pay off for state residents. If, on the other hand, you're paying $200,000 per job, that's much less likely scenario. So, I think that it would be wise for the state to try to negotiate a lower cost per job deal with Foxconn.
Part of the hope when this thing was first announced was that it was going to create this gravitational force that was going to create more jobs than Foxconn itself. It was going to make Wisconsin and southeastern Wisconsin a hub of technological development and production. The supply chain was going to maybe create even more jobs. With the latest plans we're seeing from Foxconn. Do you see that as a likely outcome?
Well, I actually included that in my analysis. I included, you know, what economists call the multiplier effect, and I included the multipliers that the various consulting firms that the state and Foxconn use, which said called for a multiplier somewhere between 2 and 3. That is, a multiplier between 2 and 3 means that every one job at Foxconn, there are 1 or 2 other jobs in Wisconsin will be created. So when you say a multiplier is 2, it means 1 Foxconn job, 1 additional job. And, you know, that's actually pretty typical for manufacturing plants like Foxconn. I mean, you know, you can always speculate there'll be some magical technological spillovers and they're going to, you know, there's not a huge amount of evidence that in this case that that will occur when people have looked at this. Yeah, high-tech firms have a little bit higher multiplier. It's not that much higher. You know, it tends to be higher in Silicon Valley, places like Silicon Valley, or for that matter, Madison, than it might be in southeast Wisconsin. You know, so I think assuming a magic multiplier for which there's not a huge basis is unwise. On the other hand, a multiplier somewhere between 2 and 3 is not crazy. I incorporated that in my analysis. Even when you do that, it's unlikely that if you pay $200,000 per job that you're going to get enough in benefits for state residents to justify that cost.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about Wisconsin's deal with Foxconn and a new report that says it might be more costly for Wisconsin as plans have shifted and a possible renegotiation could be in the works. Tim Bardick is with us, senior economist for the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research and the author of that report. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Should the state and Foxconn renegotiate? What should the state try to get out of it? Do you still have high hopes for what Foxconn could mean for Wisconsin's economy, for its job outlook? Or do you have fears about what's going to come out of all this? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tim, before we go to our callers, we talked about Wisconsin's possible incentives for wanting to renegotiate with Foxconn. Why would Foxconn want to? What would they want to see change in a deal? Do they have any reason to come back to the table at this point?
Well, there are a whole range of scenarios. Under some scenarios, Foxconn would end up, you know, under the original contract, getting over, you know, getting $170,000 or more per job. Under other scenarios, there would be these clawbacks. And so, you know, I potentially think there could be some political. I think they might rather have a more modest amount of money with some certainty rather than some big political fight over clawbacks. So I think there are some reasons why Foxconn might say, well, look, you know, we're going to have trouble meeting these job targets. Maybe we can negotiate a more modest deal. We can get less money per job, but not deal with the political consequences of having large clawbacks and fights over that.
Let's go to our callers now. Tom is with us in Superior. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've traveled a lot through central Kansas and watched different municipalities battle tooth and nail to get a trash-to-steam plant or a low-level radioactive trash dump. And the question is, why can't we just outlaw incentives like this entirely and have municipalities and states compete for business based on infrastructure, based on the education and training of their population, transportation modes, and quality of life? So we have to stop giving away these so-called tax breaks and do something that actually benefits everyone.
Tom, thanks for the call. Tim, Tom saying end the subsidy wars among American states and cities.
Well, you would have to be willing to have the federal government step in and restrict it. You know, the European Union, which has member states like France and Germany, restricts this much more than the United States restricts what states do. So in the European Union, they have rules that a lot of what we do in incentives in the U.S. would be considered illegal export subsidies if France or Germany tried to do it. What they do is say that unless you're in a distressed region, these things are severely restricted. So Paris and Berlin, since they're doing pretty well, cannot offer any incentives. In economically distressed regions, these things are capped as a percentage of wages or as a percentage of the investment. And even there, it probably wouldn't be as great as what some state offers are. Certainly wouldn't be as great as the Foxconn offers. So, but in order to do that, you'd have to be willing to have the federal government come in, set up some rules for what these incentives could be, and it would involve federal involvement in state decisions about how they structure their business tax system. I think it would arouse considerable political controversy.
You mentioned earlier, and I just seen the headline and didn't get a chance to dig into it, this truce apparently between Missouri and Kansas. Apparently they've been having dueling subsidies, trying to lure businesses back and forth across the border, as we've seen Wisconsin try to do in some cases against Illinois. Do you see this as a case where states thought, okay, hey, we're kind of both losing in this battle?
Well, yeah, and we're, hopefully this will spread. But on the other hand, I, to be honest with you, I'm a little skeptical that without federal intervention this will work, because there have been attempts to do this before. There have been, going back, I've been working in this field in the 1980s, since the 1980s, and there have been, there were attempts in the 1980s and in the 1990s to have various truces. I think there was one between New England governors at some period to try to have a truce. And the trouble is, since states are sovereign, you know, if Kansas and Missouri reach this deal, either state can drop out of it at any time. So if a new governor or a new legislature comes in and decides, well, well, we want to have this incentive program, we're going to go ahead, there's not much you can do. In order to really have this to be enforceable, you have to have some outside power enforce it, like the federal government.
Talking to Tim Bardick from the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He has a new report out on Wisconsin's deal with Foxconn, what could happen under possible renegotiations between the two parties there. Back to your calls now. Joe is with us in Mount Pleasant. Joe, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I think that in Mount Pleasant, they certainly made the wrong decision taking a couple square miles of prime farmland and converting into this factory. It's going to be gone forever. Plenty of brownfields. They could have certainly done this, but I understand the business point of having everything under one roof. But that being said, this huge complex, the infrastructure is not there, transportation, housing, and so forth to address this. There's a train line going by there, but there's no way to get to O'Hare from that particular train line. Finally, the village board in Mount Pleasant, I think they got bamboozled by Scott Walker. They bit off more than they could chew, and I think they've just been overwhelmed by the Foxconn issues, and they can't really address the other dog catcher issues that have to be addressed in Mount Pleasant, because they've got this millstone now around their neck for the rest of their lives in Mount Pleasant, and the residents are going to suffer from it. Probably not a good place to live. So I'll take my answer off the air, but I really wish they would have looked at brownfields and try to redevelop that versus taking prime farmland. Thank you.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Joe worried that Mount Pleasant local government was bamboozled by the governor and, I guess, by Foxconn, Tim.
Well, I guess I don't. I mean, it's. I imagine it's pretty difficult for a local government when the state's really pushing for a deal to say no. I mean, local governments are creatures of the state. Ultimately, their powers are constrained by the state. I believe my understanding is that the state basically guaranteed certain debts for the various infrastructure investments that the local governments made. So maybe they felt, gee, this will potentially provide benefits for our residents, and the state has promised that we'll be held harmless if things don't work out. Now, you know, you hope that the project works out at least in some form. I mean, given that the local government has made all these investments and the state has backed them up, although Foxconn is also supposed to make some payments, you would kind of like the project to at least somewhat work out and go forward, even if at a much smaller scale, now that the decision's been done. I mean, the caller also raised the issue of whether or not it would have been better to put it somewhere else. I don't know if that was on the table, whether or not there was any attempt to talk about brownfield locations in the state.
Thanks a lot for that call. We heard from Jan on Facebook, who writes, what about the fuzzy deal with UW-Madison that would let Foxconn exploit UW researchers and the loss of valuable intellectual property? I think supporters of the deal say, hey, Foxconn's going to have these have the support for various UW system schools and have this public-private partnership there. What do you think about, is that a possible side benefit of the project?
Well, I actually don't know too many details about the deal with UW, what's in it, and whether that actually is going forward. I read one recent article, I think, that said that they hadn't heard about that lately and it wasn't clear what was going on with it. I think you always need to look at the details on deals like that. It could very well be a good thing for the state and the university. If there are a lot of attempts around the country to have university business partnerships, sometimes they're quite fruitful, other times they're not so fruitful. So certainly, look at Silicon Valley, that originally came out of Stanford Business Park and Research Triangle area, all the things, Route 128, Boston area. So certainly we don't want to have no university business partnerships. On the other hand, we always need to look at the details of how they're negotiated.
In our last minute, you mentioned, Tim, that there are a lot of possible outcomes here. What are some of the next things you're watching for to get an idea of what's going to happen here?
Well, what I want to see is what actually is the negotiation over the next couple of months. I mean, I believe that there will be some kind of attempt to renegotiate this on both Foxconn and Wisconsin's part. I believe that's in the best interest of both Wisconsin residents and probably Foxconn. That will eliminate some uncertainty on both sides about what the costs are, and hopefully it will negotiate the deal down to a more manageable level. And hopefully it'll be a level at which Wisconsin residents can feel that they're not, you don't want to pay so much money for Foxconn that it inhibits your ability to pay for schools and infrastructure and other things that Wisconsin residents need. That's the bottom line.
Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tim Bardick, senior economist for the nonpartisan W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He joins us today to talk about a recent report he wrote about Wisconsin's deal with Foxconn. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a personal finance expert about how to deal with ongoing credit card debt. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.